Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table,
a new United Methodist community of faith taking shape at Central UMC in Sacramento, California.
The podcasts currently feature the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Duhirsu,
with a musical introduction by Anthony Coleman, our director of music.
Thanks for listening.
Days before the Passover, Jesus came to Bethany, the home of Lazarus, whom he had raised from the dead. There they gave a dinner for him. Martha served, and Lazarus was one of those at the table with him. Mary took a pound of costly perfume made of pure nard, anointed Jesus' feet, and wiped them with her hair. The house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. But Judas Iscariot, one of the disciples, the one who was about to betray him, said, "Why was the perfume not sold for 300 denarii and the money given to the poor?" He said this not because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief. He kept the common purse and used to steal what was put into it. And Jesus said to him, "Leave her alone. She bought it so that she might keep it for the day of my burial. You always have the poor with you, but you do not always have me."
Jesus, are you real? Did we make you up? Is salvation what you want? Or is faith enough? Do you know where I'm bound? Do you know who I am? Are you just a word I use when I don't understand? Standing like a statue in the sea, in a little truck stop in Tennessee, and bombs are crashing down in waves on a giant TV screen. And I am struck, I cannot move. To make it stop, what can I do? People are dying in their beds while this flag flies over our heads. Jesus, are you stronger than a loaded gun? I'm beginning to believe you're not the only one strong enough to show your love, strong enough to give. All I do is doubt you, God. All I do is love you, God. All I do is question you. What else can I do? This world was never solid ground. Religion cannot help me now. And all I do is search for you. What else can I do? And when I say I search for you, I mean I search for peace. I search for hope, I search for love, and one day for release. God, give me strength to accept the things that I just cannot know. And even when I lose control, I will not let you go.
There's a new book out. It's being called The New Feminist Manifesto. Just take a breath if I've already upset someone. I'm just saying, I'm trying to be gentle. This is what it looks like. I'm on my second read through. It's worthy. It's called Lean In. And Sheryl Sandberg wrote it. And for those of us who aren't familiar with her, she is the COO of Facebook. And she's ranked on Fortune's list of the 50 most powerful women in business, and also as one of Time's 100 most influential people in the world. She's on the cover of Time magazine right now. And if you notice, just even notice the pose. They've got her standing like this. It's so funny what we do to try and exude power, you know. Back in 2010, Cheryl became really well known for her TED Talk, in which she described how we women unintentionally hold ourselves back, mostly in our careers. She was speaking to working women that work outside the home. This talk has been viewed over 2 million times. 2 million times. And in that talk, she encourages women to sit at the table, to seek challenges, to take risks, to pursue our goals with gusto. What she's telling us to do is when you're sitting at the corporate table, which is her image, she wants us to lean in. Well, writing about this on her MSNBC blog, another feminist, Melissa Harris Perry, states, and she's talking really about people that call themselves the millennial generation, a lot of whom are in this room right now. She says, we can lean in all we want, but no amount of personal ambition can change what systemic economic and social policies could do for women and for men, for that matter, in our generation. So she's taking her on a little bit. We need leaders, she said, who will revolutionize work-life policies, innovate new work cultures, deepen the discourse on what constitutes success, because the system is stacked against not just corporate women, but people, men and women, of all classes and all professions. She's questioning what we're leaning towards, you see. She's questioning what we're leaning towards. And she wants all of us to do that. But she's encouraging us that leaning towards is even more essential in this cultural moment when many of our most prominent female role models are corporate executives. I don't want to lean in, said one young millennial female, if it means it's only for me, if it's only for myself. I don't want power and prestige if it means I'm perpetuating the inequality that's all around me. As far as I'm concerned, my struggle is inextricably linked with others. Well, Mary of Bethany didn't have a book like that. She didn't have a feminist manifesto to guide her. She had this man named Jesus, and she knew, I think, what kind of man he was. He was a man who leaned in long before it was popular, long before most of our cultures knew that it was even necessary or needed. Jesus began leaning in well before his time and ours. We've spent this week in Lent in this question that Jesus asked his followers, who do you say I am? And today, Mary is the one who's going to tell us who Jesus is. But first, I want to take us back to one thing. Who is Mary? Because it's a really common name, and it came up in our kitchen table this week. So, Mary. Is this the Mary that's the mother of, don't worry, I'm not going to quiz you. Is this the Mary that's the mother of Jesus? Answer is no. Is this Mary Magdalene? Answer is no. This is Mary, whose sister's name is Martha, whose brother's name is Lazarus, and she lives with them in Bethany, and she's a really old friend, as best we can tell, of Jesus. So I'm going to call her Mary of Bethany. That's the right answer for this morning. That's our Mary for today. And you're right if you feel a little bit confused about this, so let me see if I can help you a little bit more. There's a story in the Bible, in the Gospel of Luke, where we're told that Jesus stops at an unnamed village, and he served a meal in the home of two sisters, Martha and Mary. And Martha was the one moving around serving everyone. I think some people are familiar with this story, in a distracted but dutiful manner, doing what she knew to be proper, but maybe in her heart, she wasn't really in it, but she was doing what was right for women to do at that time. And her sister was always sitting at Jesus' feet. And her sister was always listening intently to Jesus' teaching. But in this story in Luke, Jesus praises Mary for choosing the better part, which is not going to be taken away from her. And it's different. It's different than what Matt read for us this morning. And it's confusing because the stories are blending together for people. Because there's another story. There's another story. And that's where they call her. They don't really name her, but they call her a sinful woman. So in this other story, in another portion of Luke, there's a woman, sinful woman, who crashes in another birthday party or a dinner party, or we don't really know. But in that case, these Pharisees are having this party, and a woman brings in an alabaster jar of ointment. Now, that's sounding familiar with what Matt read, right? And she anoints Jesus' feet with that, but also she cries and anoints his feet with tears. So it's not that woman. And she doesn't have a name. Then there's another record in two other books of the Bible, Mark and Matthew, and they're in a party again, and Jesus is at that table with a guy named Simon, and he's a leper in a town called Bethany. That's familiar, Mary of Bethany. But in this case, too, it's an unnamed woman. And instead of anointing Jesus' feet, she does his head. And when you anoint someone's head, that means something different than anointing their feet. It's a way for Jesus, in that case, to start talking about being a forgiving person. It's a completely different subject than we have this morning. But if you notice, what Matt read for us, our passage for today, includes elements of both of those, all of those accounts. As Mary anoints Jesus' feet, but her action gets linked with Jesus' coming burial. And there's no real evidence to suggest to us that this writer of John knew about any of those other accounts. Not really. There's no real evidence to suggest that. So this morning, coming in fresh, it would be common for us to go, which Mary is it? There's all these Marys. And it's one of the few times that a woman's name, so there's so many unnamed women in the Bible, we just lump us all together. All women look alike, right? So John is putting together his own story, his own unique theology, and it's serving him a purpose. Because John wants us to know that what Mary of Bethany does with Jesus is really a significant act. And that everything we hear from that point on is going to be through the lens of a knowing of this woman, that Jesus isn't going to be here much longer, that he's not going to be with them. So what does that mean about the significance of this act? Well, I'm going to talk a little more about the passage. Because you heard him say that Lazarus was sitting at that table. Well, who is he? Lazarus is her brother, not just any brother. Jesus happened to raise him from the dead. It's the only time that that happened in their family. It's a huge, momentous moment. I'm thinking Mary's really happy in a shock and awe kind of a way. She's been reunited with her brother in this life. And they're at table together. So Mary moves to his feet. I think she seems pretty darn clear about who Jesus is. about what kind of honor would be due this man who brought her brother back from the dead. He deserves everything from her, the best that she has, her deepest self. Never mind that others haven't made up their minds about him in the room. She doesn't care. Never mind that they're more hesitant. Never mind that others are worried about doing the right thing and the proper thing, the accustomed thing, the dutiful. Never mind, because Mary knows in her heart, on some deep level, that this man deserves everything from her. Everything. Because just recently, when Jesus arrived, right after Lazarus had died, she saw him coming up, I imagine this, but before she could get to him, her nice sister Martha, following all the rules, went out to greet him. And he and Martha met out there on the road, and they had a conversation, and she let him know what he was going to expect, and she let him know what that, you know, Lazarus is in the tomb and all of that. But when he comes to Mary, they just stand there, and it says they just weep. There's some kind of a knowing there. Because, you know, there's these people we greet in our lives, and then there's these people who look right through us. And I can't think of it right now or I'll start crying. You know what I mean. So they meet, and she's weeping, and he's weeping, and she runs to her bag, and she brings out the oil she's kept back for Lazarus. Because she's like, well, maybe he is eventually going to die. I better keep some of this. I might need it. And she holds on to that oil. Now, why is that even important? If Jesus is going to go and crack open this tomb, a tomb back then, dead, 3 days, it's going to smell horrific. They didn't have fans and venting units. It's going to smell horrific. The kind that even you can imagine.
You have to do this.
But what does she do? She's sitting at the table. I imagine that smell is just kind of lingering over them, even though they have the food there. And she cracks it, the jar. And the oil flows out all over her hands and onto his feet, and that gross, nasty, lingering death smell gets replaced by a new fragrance. A new fragrance of her love and her devotion. And then, without any more thought than that, I think she wipes his feet with her hair. And that's significant because the word in the Bible that says that she wiped his feet is the same verb, the same word that's used to describe what Jesus does when he washes his disciples' feet later. She does it first. The foot washing that happens, that Jesus does, is at the Last Supper. And we know what comes after that. So I think that the writer of John absolutely loves this scene. I think that because of what happens next, because of all the people in that room who could have complained about Mary, who could have, you know, just been unhappy. I'm trying to find an appropriate word, you know. Her out. He chooses Judas. Judas is shown to be the one who speaks out against Mary. And what we know, because we're in the know as the reader, he's already shown to be untrustworthy because we know what's ahead for him. He's going to betray Jesus. And he's the one who says, that's too much money, what you're doing, it's too costly. Well, he should know because he's the one who watches the money, right? He's the keeper of the purse for the community that's all there gathered. And the early followers explained his betrayal, the early traditions of Christian followers, by saying he was greedy. Because if you had the keep of the purse, what it says is he could use it to help himself, because he was not one who cared about the poor. They already knew that about him. So John uses him to be the complainer. And he was saying these things not as one who cared about the poor, as Woody Guthrie's song reminded us just last Sunday. Because if you follow Jesus, you gotta care about the poor. And if you betray that, you betray not only just Jesus, but everybody in that room, because everybody's giving you their money, right? You're the holder of it. But Mary's clear. Just look at her. There's no betrayal in her. She gives absolutely everything for him. She leans in. So let's think about, what's it mean for a woman to lean in? There's this. What do? We do that, right? Because you're not supposed to let this show. Keep it proper. Nobody did that back then. She leans in. She loosens her hair. Not just anywhere. It's all men other than her sister in that room. A respectable woman would not have done that. And then she pours out her oil, right? She cracks it open in ways that they did it there, sealed with wax. And she just pours it. And it's oil, so see how quiet it is. And you know how oil feels, right? It just goes all over you. And then it goes all over him. At her touch, he's a rabbi, a teacher. You don't touch men, but you do not touch rabbis. If you touch a rabbi, you better be a man. So you don't touch men, you don't touch rabbis, especially if you're a woman. But she does. She sits at his feet, she anoints his feet, she wipes his feet with her hair. When you wipe oil with hair, it's going to show all day long. You don't run out for a shower back then. And she knows when she does this, I believe, exactly who Jesus is. And when you rub it like that, then the fragrance permeates the room even more, because it's on her and it's on him. And then they move around. It's a moment to cherish. For all of them. I want us to just watch one interpretation of this video and read these words again.
Yeah.
It's a moment of stillness when she does that, amid a gathering storm. And Jesus takes on Judas and tells him to leave her alone. And in my mind, it's back off. You know, you're not always going to have me here. And then I imagine this wordless dialogue taking place. And we heard the words, Nicole sang them out of Mason Jennings' version of this happening, which is, when you do not know, you know. And when you know, you do not know. And when you think you do, you die. And when you do not think, you grow. It's a wordless dialogue that happens between two people when you look in each other's eyes and you think, and maybe a word passes like, I know. And Jesus says, I know you know. And Mary says, now I know that you know that I know. Love's deep silence surrounds their mutual understanding. In that moment, it's a sphere of love and unsheltered words. And only in a place like that is love really what works. And prayer and oil and taking one's time so that you can enter those dark, hard places of our souls, which is what she entered with Jesus, who knew he wouldn't be there much longer. And then her identity shifts, I think, because the message then becomes from God through Mary to Jesus, right through Mary. And God is talking to Jesus in the house, in the home where he doesn't have to do any pretense, you know, he's with his old friends. Right there at his feet, he experiences God speaking to him. It's just so amazing how God surprises even Jesus by using a woman with her hair down, breaking convention, to prophetically witness to what she knew to be true about Jesus, which is what Jesus was living into in his own time. Isn't that the way God works? Isn't that the history of God and using prophets? Their behavior seems so outlandish and odd to those who stand around at the table or sit around and watch them. There's this guy, Ezekiel, in the Old Testament. He eats a scroll. He eats a scroll of God as a sign that he carries scripture around inside him. He'd be diagnosable today. There are people who eat paper, you know. But really, he's one of God's great prophets. Jeremiah, that guy, he smashes jars of clay to call attention of all the people. He smashes jars of clay on the ground. And Isaiah, I don't know if you know this about Isaiah, he walked around Jerusalem naked and barefoot for years. Dude. Naked and barefoot. Because he was trying to call attention to the government of the day being unfair, unjust. Prophets do these things. They act out the truth that no one else can see. And those of us who stand around and watch them, write them off as crazy, diagnosable, or sometimes, like maybe in this case, we just fall silent before the disturbing news that we're witnessing. That's Mary, standing in front of Jesus, a jar in one hand, all emptied out, and her hair tie. She's like, you know, she had a choice, I think. It could have gone either way. Because there's a lot of pressure on us to stay conventional. She could have just gone for his head, I told you, that would have been an honor, right? I really want people to understand that going for the head would have been a testimony to him being a king. And it would have signified to everyone that he was a ruler. And maybe most important of all, if she had done that, everybody would have gone, "Phew, I thought she was going to do something again." People get nervous around prophets. Mary could have returned to doing what well-behaved women do, well-behaved women who never make history. They do the expected. They lean back. They lean back and they wait for someone else, which is the story of most of humanity. It's my story a lot. I do what's expected. I grew up, I went to college, I got married, I had 3 kids, I got a job. We do what is expected because it's hard enough to simply accomplish that. I would like kudos for doing that, you know? It's hard enough. Because to do what's expected, first of all, you got to figure it out. And to do what's expected about Jesus, well, you got to figure it out. And that's what we're trying to do. And that's what I think all of us are trying to do. We come in the door and we show up and we listen and we think and we read and we research. We're looking every week in Lent towards Easter at who we say Jesus is. And we've gone through all of these week by week. He was baptized. He was a mother hen. He's the prodigal father telling us that story of unending love. And this week we see him telling people to back off as he's surprised. He's a person who is surprised by God through an unconventional messenger. That's who he is this week. We live in a time when so many of the folks who proclaim to follow Jesus would have us believe that Jesus wants us to sit back. But it's the belief of the Marys from our faith tradition who take faithful action as response to what they know to be true of Jesus. The writer of John does not tell us, notice this, what Mary believes. What he does is just allow us to be in the room and to watch it unfold right before our eyes. So our invitation again is to think about a Jesus who cuts through the protests and the judgments and proclaims firmly this week in the face of those who would object, to a person who's unexpected, saying yes to growing her faith. Leave her alone. That oil was intended that she would save it for the day when I was no longer going to be with you. You're always going to have the poor among you. You're not always going to have me. I'm here now. It's not always going to be. So when you consider the question of who Jesus is, be open to the messages and the messengers. I mean, you might even learn about Jesus in a church or from your neighbor or from Brendan. I mean it. He gave Matt his first piano lesson. I mean it. When you take risks from unexpected messages, from unexpected sources, that's where we meet Jesus.
each other's pain. Let